where you can do all those things and so much more. Just grab a seat in the chair or the floor. Sit back, relax, recline. While she drops another casual line. You're tuned into Casually Molly with Molly and Bergie.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Casually Molly podcast. I am your host, Molly Ambergy. And before we get into our next interview, I just wanted to let everyone know we do have the last show of This Is Casually Happening, a comedy showcase happening at the Golden Hoosier on Wednesday, December 13th at 7:30 p.m. Don't miss out. You're going to see one of our podcast guests, JB Buchanan. He has been currently touring with comedian Samuel Comro from America's Got Talent, so you will not want to miss JB while he is back in town headlining our show, And then, of course, we do have some really awesome features right here in St. Louis, Missouri. We have comedians Jake Beckman and Meredith Hopping. You are going to love them. They have been seen at the Funny Bone St. Louis as well as Helium Comedy Club. So just make sure that you get your tickets. Of course, I will be your host, but you can go to our website, thecasuallymollypodcast.com, or just go to Eventbrite and you can search This Is Casually Happening to get your tickets. Now that we've got that out of the way, we are so excited to introduce Marcy Bursack. She is an author, and she talks about her books, The Forgotten Adoption Option, and then she also has a book release coming out this Friday, December 8th, and I will let you listen to the book title when you hear our interview with her, but you are absolutely going to love her. Not only am I biased because she is my neighbor, but she is also a really lovely person on a mission to tell people about the adoption process and what brought her to do that. She's also got a great, interesting story about being on the Kelly Clarkson show. So stay tuned and thank you so much for listening. Welcome back to the Casually Molly podcast. I am your host, Molly Ambergy, and I am so excited to introduce our next guest. As you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, she is just absolutely lovely. She's also very genial. She's waving. Let me tell you a little bit about Marcy. Marcy, how do you say your last name, by the way?
You know, there's so many ways. It's just Bursack.
Oh my God, that's what I was going to say. Okay. Yay. Casually just asking how we say Bursack, and that's great. But then, you know, somebody could change. My last name is Ambergy, so people change that around all the time. But what I love about Marcy's story is that she is an author. I'm really excited about the journey that she is on. The book that I have read is The Forgotten Adoption Option. And yes, that's what we're going to get into today. But before we get into all of the other questions I'm going to have, I know that you have a book release coming out this Friday, December 8th. And why don't you tell us a little bit about that new book that you'll have coming out and what it's about?
Ooh, I love this. So brand new book is called What to Know When You Adopt Through Foster Care, Real Life Stories and Practical Tips. This, I think we're going to talk a little bit later about Pilot Pen and the Kelly Clarkson show. So not to spoil that at all, but this book, the intention, I had a funder that said, if we gave you this grant, what would you do? And I slept on it because I really wanted the grant. And I thought, what's the thing I haven't scaled yet? And this book is so incredible. I have over 55 anonymous stories. So my husband and I are in there. You don't know which ones we are. All the pronouns are just clean and simple because we want to help you understand the real and the raw inside of the foster care adoption system. And a lot of that is, this is how you as that parent, that future adoptive parent, can really muster through the process. So this book is wonderful to give you a high dose of reality, a lot of great advice. And it's really me and my friends just circling around you and telling you who these kids are and how to adopt them.
Awesome. Yes. And what I love also about Marcy's journey into being a writer and whatnot, how I met her, we kind of talked about this a little bit pre-recording, but Marcy and I both live in Old Town St. Charles. And my husband and I had first moved to Clark Street and we're giving out candy. It was the very first year we were giving out candy. And the last trick-or-treater we had was Marcy's little girl, Izzy. And I just happened to say, oh my gosh, you guys look so much alike. And Marcy's like, oh, that's so funny because I actually, like, she's adopted. But, you know, I could just feel the love between you guys and we got talking about your story. And so I know you told me, but why don't you tell people that are listening or watching our interview why you decided to go down the adoption route when starting your family with your husband?
Yeah, for us, it really, it was our plan A. Some people are motivated. It, a lot of people think, because I actually got asked by some people, like, oh, are you guys having an infertility journey? And while that's a very common conception that people think, oh, that's why you adopt, it's actually only about 20% of people do. There's 80% of us have different motives. And for us, I had served in an orphanage overseas in Europe. I worked for a week with older girls, and I got to learn about their future, which did not include anything that I would have imagined or wanted as a teenager. I was in my early 20s. And then my husband, his grandfather, Sam, actually grew up in St. Louis City, not too far from where your studio is.
Okay.
And when Sam was seven, his mom and dad died of pneumonia within a few months of one another, leaving three kids. They were first generation immigrants from Serbia. And they didn't have family. There was no family in America. And so what happened was Sam's two older siblings got taken in by a family that needed kind of help on their farm. So almost like indentured servants. And Molly, Sam never got adopted. He was a young boy. He had gone through trauma. He'd gone through loss. So you can imagine, right? Like, you probably weren't warm and fuzzy on the outside either. So my husband grew up with Sam, who spent his life, like his early years, begging for food, sleeping in the back of grocery stores, and just making it. Sam ends up later really having an incredible American dream experience, meets a wonderful lady, ends up opening his own business. He sold used cars, used some of his street smarts, and sold some of those cards to maybe some gang members. That's okay. So we had some cool stories in there. But for us, when we were dating, I was like, hey, just so you're aware of my heart, like, I went overseas and saw this. And that I don't want to even know if my body can have biological children. I know that I saw a huge need. And my husband said, I'm 100% on board with you, which I was very surprised to hear. But he said, but they need to be in the U.S. And I was like, well, that's how do you do that? I didn't know how to adopt older children in the U.S. And that's once we were married, it took us about 5 years to understand that you can adopt through the foster care system without ever being a traditional foster parent. Like, you can just say, I would like to adopt children that are legally adoptable, and you can adopt children. There's 113,000 that remain, and my husband will not let me have a dozen kids or more, maybe a couple thousand. So I now teach people how to go through that process so that we can help all of the children that are waiting have a forever family.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, when I was reading your book, I really had no idea how the adoption process works either, because sometimes I feel like when I talk to people, whether they've adopted, whether they haven't, sometimes it's like, oh, what an intimidating process. Like, how do you go about this? Like, it's crazy to think of, because it's also too, there are people who I have spoken with and they're like, oh, if I adopt, like, am I going to be a parent that's going to be approved by law? Like, what's going to happen? And these sort of things. So what was going through your mind when you guys first started the journey? I mean, obviously you were like, yes, we're going to do this. This is going to work.
My husband was not yes. Like, I have a podcast as well. It's called the Forgotten Adoption Option Podcast. And he's one of my very first episodes. Okay. And there's kind of a term for this. We call it the reluctant spouse. So like, usually in whatever the relationship is, two people together, if you are in a relationship, when you go through the adoption journey, one of you is like me and you're like, let's do it. And like, you don't think logically at all. You think all with your heart and all with your energy. And then you have someone like my husband that's like, but these are all the reasons why we shouldn't. And this is why we're not ready. And this is why. And he talks a lot about from his perspective, where he was like, I loved having no kids. Like, it was a great life. It was a really great life. Right. So what happened, Molly, is we were at a church that had there's a kind of a holiday, if you will, like a celebration in November. November's National Adoption Month. And there's a weekend. It's now morphed, but it used to be called Orphan Sunday. Now it's Stan Sunday as well. But the gist of it is, around the country, we'll try to spotlight children's causes and children that are adoptable around the world. And the church we were at did this event. They gave you like a pamphlet when you walked in. And I saw for the first time, you know, we train families how to adopt through foster care. And I was like, what? So we stop at the table. There's only one packet left. No one's at the table. I bring this packet home. And my husband's famous words were, we're not really going to do this, right? Of course, I'm like, you're kidding me, right? So I was like, oh, it's okay. It's 2 pages front and back. So we'll just do a page a night and it will just help us conversate. Like, it'll be okay. And you know, I mailed it in at the end of those 4 nights. And I just got us moving in the right direction. Yes. But there comes a lot of doubt in that. I remember, you know, once you're far enough in the process, you get to start reading profiles of adoptable children. And there are things you read or things you wonder that you're like, well, what if? And you have a lot of that. That was me for a good season. And my husband had to sit me down one night. He was like, hey, if we had biological children, it would not eliminate any of these things you're asking. Like, mm-hmm. you just need to understand that, like, there's no guarantee that they will or will not have this need or make these decisions. And I would say, Molly, I'm still growing in that space. I mean, my kids are now in middle school. And so it's a whole world where, you know, I think as my kids have gone into the education system, even just helping them understand their identity in a system that isn't necessarily set up to talk about that. So, for example, you know, early elementary, my kids were asked to bring in a baby photo. My kids don't have baby photos. So we had to kind of figure out how to navigate that one. Mm-hmm. And then in fifth grade during the pandemic, my son was told he could write a paper on any topic he wanted. And he said, I want to write about foster care adoption. I just come out with my first book that you've read, The Forgotten Adoption Option. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you Google that, you get a lot of heavy state jargony, like it's not easy to understand language. So he's trying to like write this fifth grader paper. And his teacher goes to him and says, honey, like, this is really sweet and all, but like, you should probably pick a different topic because this is complicated. That's what my mouth did, Molly. You're dropping your mouth for those that are listening to us. And my son said, Mom, I told her I was still going to do my topic because I wanted my peers to understand me. Like, of course, wanted to represent and bring mm-hmm. that out. And so just helping your kids navigate a world that maybe isn't first and foremost there, which I think in some ways might have led it to, I launched a lesson plan earlier this calendar year with two local Girl Scouts where we go into elementary schools K-5. And I have a mm-hmm. children's book called Her For You, A Forever Family. And we talk in a classroom setting to celebrate families where children have been adopted. And it's been like the most beautiful thing. I had a great, great experience in the kindergarten classroom in St. Louis County. And this little girl was so excited we started the lesson and she raised her hand and wanted to tell the class she was adopted. And aww. We provide all this material. So the teachers are very equipped for pretty much anything. And this little boy next to her was like, well, why were you adopted? And the teacher tries to swoop up the because they're kids, right?
Yes,
you haven't had this exposure.
Yeah.
And the teacher swoops the conversation and said, well, we're actually going to talk about why kids were adopted. Molly, that little girl raised her hand a second time.
Oh.
She said, I want to share.
Oh.
She did. She knew. She knew who she was. She said, well, you know, I'm from China. That's where my first family was. And they couldn't take care of me. And my mom here, because she's a single parent, my mom here, she wanted a baby. And so in my children's book, I look at different demographics of people that adopt. And sometimes it's a single parent. And like, to me, that was the coolest moment because she felt like I am seen. Like, I see myself in this book. And furthermore, look at her confidence telling her entire class her story. Like that to me, like we can talk about adoption without it being weird, you know?
Yeah. I think that's the thing too, is that like there shouldn't be, lack of a better word, like a stigma attached to it or anything like that. Like, if, you know, I just feel that I'm so glad you're highlighting all of these things because especially too for that little girl to raise her hand a second time is such a testament to how her mom is explaining to her and how well she's explaining her to her that you are special. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it reminds me, my mom had me later in life. So everybody's like, oh my gosh, your mom had a baby in her 40s. And like, I remember like people would be like, well, why did she decide to do that? And because my mom gave me the tools to be like, oh, well, I was wanted. Like, I wasn't a mistake. I had this. And then people be like, oh, well, okay. And it's kind of the same, not exactly the same thing, but just
right,
kind of
but
the
you
training.
Knew your story.
Exactly.
Yes, that's
like,
beautiful.
It's not about like hiding where, you know, somebody started and where they fit. You know, it's just being like, this is only the beginning for you, which I think is really precious and a real testament to, again, how her mom is explaining it and the relationship that they have. So I think it's great that you shared that with us. And I didn't even know you had a podcast. And I'm going to have to look into that.
Oh.
That sounds awesome. I can't wait.
I talk to different people that have adopted. We talk all about just the things that go on in this space, like mental health and other things that just help you be ready for this parenting journey.
Absolutely. And I'm sure too, what's nice is that with the book and then also bringing the podcast into it, it's almost like creating a little mini community. Cause like what we've talked about is, again, people get overwhelmed. It's a kind of an unknown territory. It's maybe like not something everybody always talks about, but as times are changing, you know, I remember I went to a gathering that it was like somebody's kind of like holiday dinner, and they were talking about this woman who was like, oh, you know, she got really touched by one of her students. It was like a Miss Honey situation where she like saw Matilda and ended up, you know, adopting her. It was kind of the same thing. And people were like, oh, well, you know, she's not married or she doesn't have a husband yet. And I was like, but who cares? If this woman is responsible enough to be able to take in a child and love that child the way that, you know, they should be, I personally think that's great. But so yeah, just like Matilda, you're putting adoption on a platform. So that's awesome. Good for you.
It came out of frustration, Molly. I mean, I think that there's this moment, I don't think, cause you moved in after what I remember of the pandemic, right? So a few years before Molly comes to the street, the neighborhood, you're like literally around the corner. The pandemic happened, right? And I had a really early case of COVID. It was like pneumonia plus COVID. And I couldn't even get tested because I wasn't 65 or older. I was too young. It was like the strangest thing. I was like, what does that happen? And I was like laser focused, like many of us were, on my screen. And I got an email from a local agency that was like, hey, can you copy paste this paragraph? And they were recruiting families from like specific zip codes or counties. And I read it and thought, am I the only person that like has friends that are like maybe in other countries or other states? Because I was like, how on earth are like the right people going to find that message? And it just stuck in my mind, Molly. I kept chewing and chewing on it. And it was like, this is not effective. Like this could be better, right? Like I'm sure it was working for what it was, but I saw this like macro view of somebody ought to. Somebody ought to figure out how to be more cohesive in this messaging. Somebody ought to put these kids in that positive light that they deserve, because that's not the first thing that on default people think about when they think of foster care, right? And so it's like, somebody ought to do that. And, you know, famous last words, of course. So I made a piece of paper of all the things someone ought to do. And at the end of it, I was like, well, I could like maybe spend an hour, like a week, just trying to do something. And it was sort of an accident, Molly, because in the process, I was like, I've gone through this, and we had already been having friends ask us to teach their friends how to go through this process. So in my living room, people would come for 2 hours after my kids would go to bed. I'd explain, and it's complicated and not a straight line. And my husband was always like, I think we scared them. And every single time they went and did it. And so it was like, maybe it's scary, but they're doing it. Like, you know, I wish someone would have told me all this stuff. And so it really just kind of like, and what actually happened, Molly, here's a fun little fun fact here is, while we were waiting, our adoption process was supposed to be like, oh, after 4 months, you can set a legal date with your kids and you can go finalize things and get a court date because they have to live with you 6 months. But they're like, oh, it'll be 4 months. We're 9 months in, Molly. We're 9 months in. And they keep changing what the future is going to be. Like, oh, it might be this instead. And I'm all like, I didn't sign up for this. Like, I signed up for adoption. Like, finalizing. I could have had a biological child by now. Like, this is obnoxious. And I just was like in a really sad moment of self-pity. And for me, out of that came, well, this has to be on purpose. Like, there has to be a reason why this journey's delayed. And I went and talked to my husband in his art studio and was like, I think we could teach people what this is like as a parent. We don't need a bad talk. We agree. We didn't want to bad talk the bio family. We didn't want to share why our kids were in care. But if we could tell you what it's like to go through this process as the adult, as the person wanting to adopt, maybe you do it too. And during that time, Molly, I was part of this local, like, collaborative of all these different nonprofit agencies that were helping to recruit families. And one of the social workers, I'm like the one community mom, everyone else is like social workers. So I'm like the untrained in the room. And one of them said, for every family that adopts through foster care, over their lifetime, 7 of their friends and family do the same. And so Molly, what I started doing is I started making note of those families we were coaching and teaching in our living room. And when my number got to 15, I thought, how high can I go in my lifetime? Because this is working. And so it's all just, I mean, to me, it's like until every child is adopted, like there's work to do.
Absolutely. No, and I love the idea too that you made it like a non-intimidating setting, like just having people come to your living room. Like, because a lot of times you read things and people are like, here's a seminar and here's this. And I feel like those kind of, it's all about the vocabulary and the delivery. Totally. And this is coming from a theater girl. I mean, like, you know, it's all about how you say something and having you be like, oh, you know what? This is, not to be like, this is casually happened to me, but like, you know, you casually adopted and you had people. And I know there was obviously more than just a casual process into making that happen. But I really admire the fact that you and your husband made it more intimate and less of a, like less of a, it, yes, it was teaching, but it wasn't like, here's what you need to do. It's like, everybody has their own story. Everybody has their own journey, but let us help you navigate through that point without having to make, cause you know, people, again, like any parent, I feel like it's like, oh, I want to be the best parent and I want to do well. And especially like when you're taking a person in, it's not just like, it's emotional. You just want to make sure you're doing the best decision and making the best decision, especially, you know, if you're going to be a dynamic person in somebody's life. So I really respect you for that. I could go on and on.
Well, it was not intentional to us. It was more just like they wanted to learn something and our kids were in bed. And so we had that time and we had a living room. And so it made, and they knew our friends. So it felt like familiar people, right? Like you just kind of, by extension, knew these people. And it's interesting to hear your take on it, though, because you're right. Like sometimes when things feel more like a sell, or it kind of dehumanizes it. Where in this space, I'm like, I'm just trying to teach other people to do what I've already done. Like that's all. I'm just trying to teach you how to be a parent for these kids. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. It's not an infomercial. It's like, you're not like, call this number today. You know, like it's just like, here, let's actually sit. Let's have, because, you know, a lot of times, especially with my marketing background, as you have worked in marketing as well, it's just like, it's a lot of just like, you know, there's a lot of pitches, but you made it very intimate, whether you meant to or not. And I think that was a great idea. Just casually meeting.
Well, it was accidental. We didn't want to say no when people were like, because I had blogged as we got, you know, delayed and people just had questions. And so it was like, well, at first I felt like I got offended, Molly, because some of the questions like that was like, are you guys struggling with infertility? And it's like, why did you ask me that? And like, you don't know what to say. Yeah. Then I think over time I've learned that like, I want people to feel comfortable asking anything, even if they don't know how to deliver it, because it's important that we talk about this. And it's important that I can hear what you're saying versus hear the words you're saying, right? It's like, you were just curious because your paradigm didn't include people like me, right? Like there are people across the country that we do choose to adopt by choice. Like that was my very first choice. It wasn't my second or third. And it's okay if it is your second or third, but it doesn't have to be that story for everyone. And we can teach each other to think things differently, right? If we tell them our stories.
Yeah, there you go. And it's also about exposure too. Cause like, again, I have not really met anybody who has adopted. So when you were saying that, I was like, oh, I would love to know more. Cause you know, a lot of times too, it's like, you see a lot of celebrities, like I always think of like Sandra Bullock or Angelina Jolie, who are lovely and it's great that they adopted, but I don't know them personally. Like I can't just be like, so Sandra, tell me what's going on. You know what I mean? Versus I'm like here, and you know, also it's a lot of times what I have at least heard is that people will, again, like when people say, even though they maybe don't mean it to come off ignorant, it does. It's like, oh, you know, people, they're a celebrity. So of course they can adopt, and they make it a sound so unattainable for the average person. And not that you are by any means average, but here's my neighbor just right around the corner. And you made that possible and made it a number one choice in your life. So what I'll ask you too is like, you know, speaking of attainability, what was, I guess like, you know, everybody has like their peaks and their lows. What was like the most like exciting part about adoption? And then also maybe what was maybe kind of a hardship or a challenge of the process that you would like, you know, maybe to be easier for other families who are looking into that, that they're like, hey, you know, I'm looking into this, but what can I look forward to? And maybe what is something that I might run into that could be a problem or a challenge?
Those are really, really good questions. And I will say too, to the point of what you were saying about attainability, I think one of the things that kept me, and I don't think I adopted the wrong children or that I adopted late, but I think if I knew what I know and what's fact, I would have moved faster. And that is that to adopt through foster care, I often say it's not a financial question. And people are like, wait, what do you mean? Because when you adopt an infant or you adopt internationally, you're dealing with tens of thousands of dollars.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then people are like, my heart wanted to do that, but like, no can do, right? Like finances, budgets can't do that. And that's where I was for a while thinking, gosh, that's expensive. And then you look at the foster care adoption space and the cost per child's $0 to $2,500. The state pays for healthcare until the kids are 18. You have access to certain childcare facilities that make summer camps and after school programs free. Like this really is not a money question at all. This is really about, can you help and lend a hand? And I think that's, if your listeners can hear one thing, it's like, please don't let a price tag be what stops you from adopting. Because in this space, that's not a hindrance. But in terms of kind of the highest high and the lowest low, Molly. I mean, there's so much in there. I think for me, I'm going to start with kind of the hardest part. And I coach families through this because I've gone through this and it sucks, but I'm going to talk to you about it anyway, is when you go to adopt a child who's been through abuse, neglect, trauma, loss, whatever their backstory is, they're going to need some sort of therapy. Okay. Like you just got to embrace that. But what's the hardest part is that you might have stuff that you've gone through that you might need to get therapy for. And for me, that was the hardest part of this journey is you can muster through things changing and delays and all that, but to really address your own wound.
Yeah.
And like, I remember talking to my husband about like, I need to do this because I know if I can put myself through this, that when it comes to my kids, they'll know mom has a therapist. Maybe this is their name. She did this too. This isn't just, oh, she's prescribing it. It's that she modeled it. Right. Mm-hmm. And that was hard work, Molly. That was hard work. I came home some nights after therapy because my boss was really accommodating at the time and I could make that into my schedule. But I remember feeling so raw and empty. And so some nights I just told my husband, like, I just want you to leave me alone. You know, like I have nothing left anymore. Like, I'm emotionally raw. And I think that's the hardest spot in this space. And I hear from people all the time that are like, I'm worried about X, Y, or Z, or maybe my dad didn't this. And so I'm concerned. And there's some sort of wound from our childhood. And the hardest part isn't just saying, I know I have a wound. The hardest part is getting help.
Yeah.
So we can be healthy about that wound and then be a parent. That's probably the most challenging because it keeps a lot of us from ever moving forward.
Yeah.
Right. Because we can talk ourselves out of it. Like, well, I can't do that because, right. I think that's the biggest challenge. And in terms of kind of the high peaks of it all, Molly, I think it's been interesting. So I adopted my kids together. They're biological siblings and I would not change that for anything. I told my husband I wanted a really big family and he did not. And so when he said max of two kids, I said, great, they'll come together. Cause that's all. And I was like, I have siblings, keep us together. Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's a big need for that. And I think in terms of the high points, it's been really, to me as a parent, just really fascinating learning who my kids are, right? Because I don't know a lot about, it's a clean slate, right? Like, I don't know what their strengths are going to be. I don't know how tall they're going to be. I don't know all these things. And I think there's a really rich dialogue that happens in my home because we are very open about things with one another, about like, you can ask anything. And so when my kids we're looking through different books and like, well, mom, whose fingers do I have? Whose toes? You know, like your first finger's longer, the middle, whatever. And I'm like, I didn't pay attention to that. I'm so sorry. But then they're like, no, it's actually great. Like I'm cool with it not knowing. It would just be neat to know too. You know, yeah. So like we have open dialogue about just different things they wonder or, you know, different things they wish they could say or they're kind of mad about, right? Because you have all sorts of feelings in the space towards your biological family. And so to me, being able to foster a home, like be able to create a home that's got an openness around really who we are as people, whether, you know, you're budding in this creative area or you're really good. My daughter is really driven to be perfect. And for a long time, I was like, this is going to be a problem. But then a year ago, I met an accountant that was like, I love my job because I get to be perfect. And I was like, excuse me?
Oh.
And she explained to me about how like she knows there's an actual answer to everything in a certain format and way to do it. And so I've talked to my daughter and she's actually interning now for my nonprofit in accounting. She's my accounting intern. Because I was like, you want to be perfect. So like just those things are just so fun.
Yes.
To do life together and to walk that out with them and see who they are and let them explore things and love it. Or like my son's amazing at a skateboard, does crazy things I would never do. So it's fun to unpack who they are together.
Yes, absolutely. And like that, I think that's amazing that I love the idea too of the openness of it. Cause I think that's another fear that I didn't even get to ask yet. And you answered, which is amazing, is that, you know, people all the time are like, oh, you know, what if I'm not doing a good job at like understanding where their feelings at, or like maybe it's just too much for somebody to be adopted and have that mess with their head. But I feel like it's just better to have somebody in a loving home and have them be able to ask those questions without feeling ashamed by it and without feeling that there's anything attached to it that they should be, you know, worried about mentioning. And what I love you too is like, it doesn't hurt your feelings. You're just like, good, like, let's talk about this. And then the other stuff I didn't even think about. I'm like, oh, okay. So, I mean, that was very enlightening. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome. But back to your point of like, how do you deal with talking about it? I think for me, I have to do my own work, right? Mm-hmm. Because there is another mom. Yeah. There is another dad, right? And I remember really early in having to recognize, like, I had a choice as the parent, thinking, as the adoptive parent, do I want to incorporate that dialogue in their lives, right? And part of where we've landed as a couple has been, well, what would we want, right? Like, would we want it to be a secret? Would we want it to be that's the thing we don't speak of? Like, we don't talk about Bruno, you know, like what do we want to form for their well-being? And I've had to do my own work because sometimes, especially in the earlier years, they might talk about bio mom or first mom. And, you know, I don't want to comment in because I don't want to skew their view, but you have to still recognize there's other people in their lives. And I think it might be, I don't have a situation, but I would imagine it's similar to like a step parent, right? Like there's still another parent that's a memory.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that involves some, if you're listening and you're like, I couldn't do that, or man, that would be really hard. It is, but you can work through it. And you can recognize that, like, it's actually a village that raises your kids anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, you drop them off at school and they've got neighbors and friends. And so this extra person that's their biological connection, like, it's okay that they're there. And we can celebrate that we're there. And we can learn about them and talk about it. And so it can be easier said than done, Molly. But it certainly, to me, it was worth the work of it. Like, exactly. To understand, like, to be open. Because there's several families that I've talked to that they actually got their children young enough. In foster care, it's very uncommon to adopt a child before the age of two just because of the legal slow process. And I have several families that have come to me that are like, oh, my daughter, son, whoever, they don't know they're adopted. And I'm like, okay, well, tell me more. And because it's, you know, now we're 7, 8, 9 years old, whatever the age is, it's so easy, Molly, to do what? It's easy to do what we did yesterday. It's so easy to not talk about it again. And so I role play with families, both as the kid and then as the adult, and help them talk through celebrating that story of like, her story, it's not a very positive one. Well, how are you going to tell it? Like, sure. Like the backstory might not be, you know, a Disney movie by any means, but like we can make it into something that, you know, you were chosen and we wanted you and we're so glad and you were protected. You know, there's all these different things that I think become worries in our mind that block us from letting people really just talk about who they really are. And so there's work in that space, Molly. There's some vulnerability, right? To go to a child that maybe doesn't know yet. And to, hey, I wanted to let you know this really special story. And it's not a one-time conversation. It's like you're opening a conversation for a lifetime. They're going to have questions at all ages and stages of their lives. Mm-hmm.
No, it's true. And you don't, I didn't even know that was even a possibility to be like, oh, they don't know. And, you know, maybe it seems scary to bring that up, but you're absolutely right. It should be treated as a celebration and put on a positive platform, which is going to lead me to, actually, speaking of positive platforms. So Marcy, obviously, she's got her book, she's got her podcast, but one of the latest achievements that she has been celebrating is a lack of a better word, but I love it. You were recently on the Kelly Clarkson show, which is a huge deal. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how that came to be? I mean, from the streets of St. Charles to the New York streets with the Kelly Clarkson show. I'd love to hear all about this. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we were going to go to LA and then the writer's strike happened. So that was like interesting. I might have checked into my plane and then 2 hours later they were like, you're not going. And I was like, awesome. Oh. Flexibility at its best. I'm going to try to not cry, but I did. Mm-hmm. I was a little sad. But basically about a year ago, Molly, I am constantly looking for new audiences to reach, right? I think if we can tell more adults about the opportunity to adopt through foster care, we can help more children. It's a really simple math game, right? And so I'm looking online at different opportunities and I see that Pilot Pen offers a $100,000 grant and they call it their G2, which is their gel pen, their G2 Overachievers Grant. And I print it out and it's this bulky, like, I don't know, 10 pages of like specifics on what you have to do to enter. And I was going to have several friends apply. And then one friend was like, Marcy, you have to handwrite this. And I think you're not understanding what you're asking people to do. So I went to my husband. And I said, hey, you know, I already write grants for my nonprofit anyway. I already have these languages, you know, as a marketing person, right? Like, this is used. Can you just take this and maybe apply as the voice behind this? And so Molly, my husband, used a Pilot pen. 12 pages later, he thought it would, handwritten, he thought it would take 2 hours. It took four. Oh, wow. It was the day that we had family in town for the holidays. We were supposed to be at their house. We're 2 hours late. And of course, Molly, I go to turn this thing in because you got to scan it and like upload it.
Yeah.
And I thought you might mail it because it's handwritten, but whatever. And their website's not working. And what you don't do the day of a deadline is you don't contact the contest saying, hi, I waited to the last minute and your website's broke. So my husband takes the kids to hang out with family. I'm at home and he was like, you're going to solve this. And I was like, I will use my newly acquired technical skills. I will figure this out. And I did. It took me less than an hour. And that was that. Like, we turned it in and I thought, you know, Molly, you can't win if you don't enter, right? Like, mm-hmm. life is that simple, right? If you're not willing to sign up or, you know, train or whatever the thing is, you can't compete in that. And so then my dogs are going to bark. So hold on.
All good.
We'll let them all run to the door. So then in March, I get an email saying I'm a top finalist. I don't know if that meant 10 of us. I don't know if the number was listed. And yeah. Again, it's called the G2 Overachievers Grant. So it's a key component here. The requirement for phase two was they gave me 7 days to make a 10-minute video. And so I was so excited, Molly. I'm reading this email to one of my board members who was adopted. And she's like, what do you have to do next? And I was like, I didn't read the email. I just got excited. Said yeah, finalist. Right. So I had some incredible mentors behind the scenes. A local business owner even told me about this tool that sucks out all the airtime, if you will, on your audio files. Because, oh, wow. You know, every second matters when you're trying. Yeah. You got all these questions to answer. You only have so much time. In true overachiever fashion, I learned my lesson from the first time. I turned it in 6 days later. Instead of 7, at exactly 10 minutes to every second of that thing, Molly, because I thought, I want to win this. Like, I want to, mm-hmm. I want to be able to, this money could help me further the work that I'm doing. And I wouldn't have to be fundraising with my time. I could spend the majority of my time helping families. And that was that, Molly. And then in the middle of a work meeting in like May, I get a call from Pilot Pen saying, you're a top finalist. We'd like to have you on the Kelly Clarkson Show. And could you make this happen? And I was graduating that week, getting my MBA. I was actually the speaker at the graduation ceremony. I just launched my reading program for elementary school students. But of course, oh, wow. You say yes, because when yes. opportunity knocks, you make everything work. So we had the flight all stacked. I'd like sleep on the plane the day of yes. my graduation. That morning. It's fine. Like, you just do it. But then the writer's strike happened. And all I knew, Molly, is that I was a top contender, basically. Mm-hmm. So, well, Marcy, you just know what you want. I don't know. I told myself I get to go on the Kelly Clarkson Show. Like, that's a win. I don't care. Like, if I get to hear, let's do this. So yeah, I got to fly to New York in October once the strike was over. And it was amazing. I told myself I was on a mission trip, like on a service project. Because people are like, what are you here for? Because you signed this NDA and you can't like tell mm-hmm. anyone what you're actually doing, right? So I was like, I'm on a service project because I'm here. I'm here yeah. advocating for kids. That's what I'm doing. And that makes sense. It was truthful. And I had the opportunity to work with their team. It was so neat, Molly, to learn because mm-hmm. we got to talk in advance, right? Like, okay, Marcy, Kelly's probably going to ask you something like this or that. I gave my longer answers, but you're dealing, you know, when I go on like news stuff, I know like my time limit, but this was all about like, okay, this is very different and structured. And it was such a fun learning experience. So I get to go meet Kelly and sharing the stage with Billy Ray Cyrus and his wife, Fire Rose, and then a comedian, yeah. comedian Sam Jay's on the couch.
Oh, wow. And, okay, cool.
Yeah, how ironic mm-hmm. is that? Yes. And mm-hmm. Pilot Pen is telling me, you know, that I won pens and I'm thrilled because I love pens.
Yeah.
And I'm on the Kelly Clarkson Show. Like, what a gift. And then out of the audience, you don't see this part on the clip that's online, waves mm-hmm. someone and they run over and they hand me this, you know, not real, but jumbo check.
Yes.
For $100,000. And they tell me that I have indeed won the award for aww. The 2022 G2 Overachievers Grant. And really out of that, Molly, when I was doing that video about what I would do this for, it was about writing that book about mm-hmm. these stories that have happened. So it's really interesting to me that it got to be released right around the same time that the show has aired. And I'm also in the middle of a research study studying the barriers that non-Ken adoptive families face when they go through this process, because if we can figure out some of those commonalities, then I can continue to help coach, guide, and create resources for the families that I serve. So really, yes. I didn't know the Kelly Clarkson show was part of this. So my husband was jotting things down, Molly. It was really about like this amount of money could really have long-term, you know, fuel behind it and could do a lot of good. And so it was a super yes. amazing cherry on top to be able to go on the Kelly Clarkson show.
Oh, I love that. And I just love that it was on a platform that a lot of people yes. could see. And again, like the exposure of people knowing that this isn't unattainable for them and that they're able to take part in it as well. And I really appreciate Pilot Pen and Kelly Clarkson for providing that opportunity and for your work to make sure that it happens. So thank you for just being a great voice for the adoption process. And we'll go ahead and wrap things up here in a second. But before I do, first of all, thank you for joining us. It was so fun having you.
Thank you for having the conversation. This is different than standing outside in the cold on like Halloween.
Right, exactly. Your kids can still take all our candy though. It's perfectly fine.
I understand. Right, you gave that. It to someone else this year, right?
I know. There was a little boy that came this year and he was with his dad and it was like at the very end of the night. And they're like, I'm so sorry. It's so cold. I'm like, no, you know what? I said, I think you're, they ended up being the last people of the night. I was like, would you just like the rest? And this little boy's like, yes. And so we just threw it in and it was great. And it was awesome. So
Molly, we strive to be the full-size candy bar house. Okay. Like that, like we're known with some of the older kids in the neighborhood. They stop by just for the full-size candy bar. You're the whole bowl of candy. Like we have no competition now. Like you're the winning house on the street.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. If you end up being the last kid of the night, it's freezing out and you're like, huh? Hi. I don't even think he's a trick or treat. This just little cute little kid was like, hello. And I was like, oh, all right. You know what? I get it. I was like, that's a force to be reckoned with right there. You're that dedicated to get your candy on Halloween night and the wind is blowing and everybody's cold.
But Molly will reward you.
I'll reward. See, you can get candy bars. You can get a bowl of candy apparently from me, but you got to be, it's like when you have to have that like caller number 10, you just have to be visitor number 10 and then you can get a whole bowl. It'll be great. But I really appreciate you coming on. Why don't you just remind us again for your book that's coming out this Friday and where we can find it?
Yeah. So the book that comes out on Friday in paperback, it's also available in ebook and audiobook if you want it early. Those are out. It's called What to Know When You Adopt Through Foster Care, Real Life Stories and Practical Tips. You can find it at pretty much any online retailer, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, you name it. It's available for you and it ships plenty of time before the holidays. So if there's someone in your life that maybe has talked about adoption one day,
yes,
this is a great resource for them. I will tell you that one thing I've learned in this space is that it's similar to when people, maybe you know someone in your life, maybe this was you, right? Like you were trying to get pregnant and you didn't tell anyone except for like your immediate circle that you were pregnant or that you were trying. And in the adoption space, it's so similar that if you're even thinking about it, you're not telling people. And so it's such a private decision. You don't, if you happen to know that family member that's told you, consider yourself so fortunate because people don't often broadcast to the world that they're thinking about adopting until they're actually mm-hmm. adopting.
Yeah.
So this is a great way to help people privately be able to discern that and the comfort of their own, wherever they want to be. And when they read things, the stories are really real and raw. I've had some people ask like, so if there's kids around, like, and maybe we're doing your audiobook. Are there certain chapters we should avoid? And my answer to that is this book is written for an adult audience. And there are some very real things in this book. And they're deliberately there because I want to be real with you and prepare you for what could be ahead and what you should be aware of. So I do not recommend playing it out loud. It is not a family-friendly campaign. Is it a great conversation topic if you want to bring your children to it? Great. But it is definitely intended for an adult ear.
Yeah, nope, that makes total sense. I appreciate it. And of course, you can read the book too that I read called The Forgotten Adoption Option. I may come around the corner and get my big size candy bar and then have you sign my book. So that'll be great.
I love this idea. Yeah, The Forgotten Adoption Option is also an audiobook and ebook, and a lot of libraries have the book. So that's an easy way to get it as well.
Yep, it is on the Day Household Library. So it works for me. I love it. And then the last thing we ask before we let our great, you know, interviewees go, what are you going to casually do now that our episode is over?
All right, Molly. So what I'm casually going to be doing is I have this pile of laundry that I'm going to be folding. It's going to be casually great. And then what I need to do is for my research study, I need to write myself a checklist because we're interviewing like 12 to 15 families and I need to make sure they're consistently going through the same process. So I'm going to create myself a little cheat sheet because Molly, I love being able to empty my brain and like just know what to reference later and just like, oh, I just follow these steps. Got it. So it'll be some laundry and a little bit of typing and then some bedtime.
Absolutely. I mean, I like a good to-do list. You just check everything off and then it's great. Aw. Well, thank you again for joining us. I'll let you go back to your husband, the dog, and the kids, and hopefully we'll see you guys soon.
Around the corner. Yeah. Just right around the corner. Sounds like you got some candy bars to exchange.
I can't wait. Yay.
This is amazing, Molly. Thanks for caring so much. It really means a lot.
Oh, well, thank you for reaching out. I always wanted to I remember I was like, oh, I got to get on my podcast. And then, of course, you know, life gets crazy and whatnot. But I feel like, and I hope our listeners, I know they will feel the same way, is that I really feel like I learned a lot more about the adoption process that I did. And then, you know, again, if you guys have any questions, feel free to message the Casually Molly podcast and we can just get you into Marcy's living room. So it'll be great. Just have some conversation. Fine. Oh, yeah. And one last thing too. Where can people find you on like social media? And I know we'll share this on our socials and everything, but if they're looking into being like, oh, hey, I'd love to know more about Marcy and what her mission work, where can we find you for that?
Yeah, all of my social accounts are public. So if you have a question, just reach out. I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook as Marcy Bursack.
Awesome. All right. Perfect. We'll have a great time with the laundry and the to-do list and give your family.
I know you're really jealous on the laundry. It never leaves. Right. I'll get done and it comes back.
Yes. It's like a Willy Wonka thing for me. Just all the it's like magic, but you know, we got the golden ticket to get it done. It'll be great. Thanks, Marcy. Have a good rest of your night. Bye, everyone.